I'm Mike Webb, and welcome to the ProPublica podcast. As the one-year anniversary of the Gulf Coast oil disaster approaches, we talked to Kim Barker, who has two riveting pieces out about how different sets of people were affected by the oil spill. Barker joined ProPublica last year and came to us after a fellowship at the Council on Foreign Relations, where she studied, wrote, and lectured on Pakistan and Afghanistan and U.S. policy. Before that, she was the South Asia Bureau Chief for the Chicago Tribune, where she was based in New Delhi and Islamabad. She has a new memoir out titled The Taliban Shuffle, and we'll get to that a little later. Welcome to the podcast, Kim.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
All right. Well, why don't we start with a brief summary of each story? Can you give us the gist of what Spillionaires was about?
Sure. Spillionaires was essentially about what happened along the coast after the BP oil spill and how some people profited from the spill in ways that weren't necessarily known at the time. And sometimes people got money and they deserved it. Sometimes people got money and it was no fault of their own. They just happened to be given a lot of money through the claims process.
Like hitting the lotto?
Exactly. And in other cases, there was a deliberate attempt to try to get as much money as possible from BP through the cleanup.
Okay.
Through price gouging, essentially.
We'll come back to that. What about the second piece about Delacroix Island?
Yeah, that was a story that was actually brought to ProPublica by a photographer who went down to the spill area right after it happened. And she really wanted to follow the fishermen and follow this community that had been dying for a long time to see how the spill would affect fishermen down there. And you're talking about a community where generations have essentially lived off the land and off the water. And the whole idea was to document what this was like for them and what it was like for them trying to pick up the pieces yet again after being hit by so many disasters and recent years.
And so for the Spillionaires piece, did you get a sense that people were deliberately trying to profit? Like, hey, this horrible thing has happened. Let's go get our money.
Oh, some people most definitely were through the cleanup. And sometimes, you know, you had folks that weren't even fishermen that were trying to get involved in the cleanup down there.
Like they didn't have boats or...
Right. Some people went and bought boats and they saw, they basically said, hey, this is our chance to get ours. And I actually had people say that to me. We wanted a piece of the action too. Why shouldn't we get a piece of the action?
That's
and
right.
I would say, well, you're not a fisherman. They'd say, so what? We were hurt by Hurricane Katrina. I think everything got sort of like melted together for some people down there in terms of seeing that the community in St. Bernard Parish, at least, hadn't recovered yet fully from Hurricane Katrina. I mean, you're talking about a place that had lost almost half of its population in the last 5 years. So very depressed, and it hadn't yet fully come back. And I think some people just saw this as, hey, this is our chance. Let's get what we can while we can.
Yeah, maybe some residual anger, and they took advantage of that moment.
Or not even anger in some cases. In some cases, it's like they knew the drill. They knew how to take advantage of a situation. And some people had actually, been involved in the cleanup back after Hurricane Katrina, and they were also involved in this.
Okay. Now, you wrote about Craig Tufaro. Mm-hmm. What was your sense of him? Was he a savvy politician?
Savvy politician.
How so?
I think Craig Tufaro is very intelligent. He's savvy. He likes control. He continually demonstrated that. I mean, to try to talk to him, you had to go through the spokespersons. He had two different spokespeople. Both of them were women. And they couldn't actually say anything without checking with him first. I mean, I think that's an indication of how much control he has. And I think that, you know, the way he puts it is that after the spill happened, he wanted to be as much as involved in the cleanup and what happened afterwards as possible. And he wanted as much money coming in there and going to folks in the community as possible. In talking to his critics, they would say, why is the parish involved in oil spill cleanup? We don't know anything about oil spill cleanup.
Well, were other parish presidents doing the same thing?
No, most certainly not to this extent. Other parish presidents definitely declared an emergency because in Louisiana there's a law that says a parish president can declare a 30-day emergency in certain situations, which means they can suspend normal checks and balances of government. It essentially gives the executive branch carte blanche to do what it wants and to take what it wants in order to do something.
And it sounds like he took full advantage.
He did. You know, unlike in other places, he was able to name the lead cleanup company in St. Bernard Parish, a company that had no experience whatsoever cleaning up oil spills, and a company that, in fact, had a fairly spotty record after Hurricane Katrina in terms of cleaning up after that particular disaster. In a neighboring parish, they had been very involved in cleaning up debris, and they had a contract to do that, but they were accused by many people of being a pass-through company, merely in the middle of these tiers of subcontractors, carving off money and then passing on the work to people who got paid much less to actually do the work.
And did they all sort of give back to Craig at some point in some way?
You know, there was definitely campaign contributions that happened. There was a huge gala fundraising event in late September where everybody who was anybody involved in the cleanup and in the parish came and donated money. President Tufaro says that all of the donations were perfectly legal and they were under the limits that required by Louisiana law. And as far as I could find out, he's absolutely right. The Louisiana law allows a $2,500 limit per donator, and it doesn't matter if you have all these different companies that are run by the same people. They can each donate $2,500.
Now, can you put any hard numbers on the number of people who profited from this?
I can't put any hard numbers on this, no.
Yeah, there's no real way to
track. I mean, there's no, and I think that's really a part of this story. How was the cleanup handled? Who did the cleanup? All we know is that BP was in charge of spending for the cleanup and that the Coast Guard was in charge of overseeing that particular response. But in terms of getting any transparent accounting of how the money was spent, where it went, what companies were involved, what subcontractors were involved, we were only able to find out what we could find out by calling every individual government and asking them. And in some cases, they said, we're not supposed to tell you that. You better go back to BP and the Unified Command and they'll tell you. And then you'd call BP and they'd say, we really have no comment on that. And we called the Coast Guard for, you know, almost 4 months until finally they got back to us this week telling us that this was a very transparent operation because everybody involved in it knew exactly what was going on. And I said, well, what about the public? You know, what about the public's right to know? And they said, oh, no, well, you know, yeah, maybe you can find that out. Yes, you can if you file a FOIA and ask for these particular things. But to me, that's a part of the story. If BP is spending all this money for cleanup and we don't know exactly what is happening, if you've got people that are telling us on the record that all these boats are out there and they're involved in the cleanup, but then you're finding out that, well, they're not really doing anything, what happened with this cleanup? Is everything indeed clean? And I think that's definitely part of this story.
And BP was in a tricky position because they couldn't really make any kind of argument that, oh, you're taking advantage of us.
Yeah, I mean, because it's like, well, I think the reaction of a lot of people is, who cares? I mean, BP is evil. That was the tendency I think a lot of people had. And I think some people saw, hey, let's just take everything we can because this company is at fault and they're the ones footing the bill. You don't even have taxpayers involved in this one.
Right.
And so there was really a tendency to get as much as you can again. But I do believe that BP is taking another look at its bills.
Okay. Now, a reporter for New Orleans Gambit Weekly said the story was a blame the victim's piece. And he wrote that he was afraid the article would give people the impression that they could focus on those who profited and not on the tens of thousands of Gulf residents who couldn't make a living anymore mm-hmm. and whose health may be at risk. How do you respond to that?
Well, I think he raises a valid point. You know, I'm not going to say that his fears are completely incorrect. I think you can see some traffic raising those very points. What I would say in response is we make it very clear in these stories that there are little people involved here who didn't necessarily get as much as those with connections, that there are victims here, and that there just didn't seem to be any rhyme or reason to how the claims money was handed out. And as far as the cleanup money, I think we documented very clearly that it had everything to do with who you know, and it didn't have to do with how affected you were.
Right. And we did a whole series on the BP claim system. Sasha Hefkin mm-hmm. wrote about that for us. So.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
How did you get started on this? What led you to start looking into it?
Well, originally I went down there, you know, I'm a former foreign correspondent, so I think that the thought was I could parachute into this place fairly easily and tell a narrative story about what had happened to the fishermen. And that was driven in large part by the photographer who had found a story about this dying community. And I went down there and I just started hearing all these complaints about this particular company, Loop, not paying its bills. And I also started hearing a lot of complaints about who was getting on and who was getting a boat on the cleanup and who wasn't getting a boat on the cleanup. And there was obviously a money story down there. And folks down there were using terms like BP rich and spillionaires. And everybody I talked to was using the same sort of language. Yet I didn't ever see anybody else who had brought it all together in a story, in a compelling story at least.
Right. And just for the record, you got the term spillionaires from down there. It's
yes.
not something.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't make it up. Right. I wish I could claim credit for it, but I can't.
And why is this a ProPublica story?
I think it's a ProPublica story because we are talking about a larger systemic issue of how these cleanups are run. This is not going to be the last time that there's a large oil spill, unfortunately. It's not going to be the last time that there's a major disaster in the Gulf. And I just wanted to raise larger questions about how these things are handled to maybe prevent this sort of profiteering from happening in the future. And also to make sure that, you know, the folks that actually deserve the money get the money.
Before we go, Kim, I want to ask you about your new book, The Taliban Shuffle.
It's true.
What's it about? What's the reaction been?
The reaction's been incredibly gratifying. I've gotten a lot of great reviews, including in the New York Times, from a reviewer that people say is very, you know, it's difficult to get praise, and she was very effusive about the book. The Taliban Shuffle is my memoir. It's a combination of my time in Pakistan and Afghanistan and what happened for the 5 years I was there reporting for the Chicago Tribune, along with a really what I feel like is a comprehensive overview of the situation in Afghanistan and Pakistan and everything that's happened there. And it's also darkly funny. So it's an easy read.
All right, Kim, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks very much for having me.
That was Kim Barker. You can read both of her stories at ProPublica.org/spill. And now for our official Say the Darndest Things Tumblr quote of the week. Just because it wasn't streaming from the well any longer doesn't mean it wasn't approaching our shore. My work is very important. Perhaps one day you could follow me somewhere and learn what my work involves. I must be in contact at all times. Who said it? LaForche Parish President Charlotte Randolph, explaining to the AP why she bought an iPad on BP's dime a month after the well was capped. Randolph had said that she needed the iPad to communicate with her staff and other officials. Okay, that does it for this week's show. Thanks to Vinicio for putting it all together. For ProPublica, I'm Mike Webb. We'll see you soon.